Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. In a few minutes, we convene a roundtable of faith leaders to talk about immigration and the treatment of non-citizens as the U.S. government takes unprecedented steps to enforce immigration policy. But before we do, we want to mark the retirement of Reverend Will Mebbin, who concludes his ministry as rector of St. Barnabas Episcopal Church later this year. He's been a regular panelist on the show. Always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Mindy's always great to be with you, especially on this Juneteenth.
Exactly. So you arrived in Falmouth in 2018 to take the position at St. Barnabas. Would you take a minute to reflect on your first impressions of the Cape community?
Well, my wife, Ronnie, and I were familiar with the Cape and Falmouth. Actually, we used to vacation here 30 years before we found ourselves living and me serving here. And I have to tell you, though, within my first 2 weeks, the impression I had of Falmouth changed radically. I went to a public hearing about the AIDS support group Cape Cod was trying to put a needle distribution program across from St. Anthony's Church. And I said, well, let me go and see if I can put my finger on the pulse of the community, get an idea of, you know, what I'm getting into. I was shocked. I could not believe the recriminations, the bigotry, the hatred. So that really shocked my system. And frankly, within 2 weeks of my joining St. Barnabas's, several families left because they didn't want the rector to be a black person.
And no kidding, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
So they left.
Yeah. Now, Troy Clarkson wrote a column in the Falmouth Enterprise about your retirement and noted, Reverend Mebbin's willingness to challenge us to face the sometimes difficult truths of inequity in our society and in our community and to work towards solutions. In the nearly 7 years here, what changes have you seen, if any, in the community's willingness to acknowledge these inequities and work towards solutions?
Well, I'm heartened by the number of faith leaders in this community, some of whom we will hear from shortly, Rabbi Breitman and Pastor Nell, and others are really engaged in doing what we're called to do as leaders of faith, to care for those who are disenfranchised and who are in need of care of all types. And so that was encouraging. And that Falmouth group, clergy group, was sort of not really as organized as it had been in previous years. And so I sent an email around to my clergy colleagues, and I said, you know, this would be really helpful for me to get to know you and to learn about Falmouth and the area if we could start meeting again regularly. And they said, yeah, let's do that. So we did. And so that that's been encouraging.
Yeah. St. Barnabas has established the Drum Majors Fund for Justice, a prophetic preaching series in tribute to you. So what do you tell us? Tell us more about this.
Well, that's I shouldn't be tuning my own horn, right? But that's very humbling. So I have a prophetic message in my preaching, and it is not always welcomed by folks. And so the lay leaders of St. Barnabas, the vestry, it's called the governing body, said, you know, when Will leaves, we want to make sure we continue to hear those messages, if not on a regular basis, at least a few times a year. So let's create this Drum Majors Fund so we can invite preachers that will come from all across the country to St. Barnabas's to preach a couple of times a year to make sure they're still getting the kind of prophetic messages that I've become known for here.
So what kinds of topics or issues are you hoping the series will cover?
All the things that I preach about all the time, Mindy, you know, gender equity, dealing with xenophobia, dealing with all the biases, all the isms, and you know, trying to live into what God has called us to do, which is to love our neighbors. And what's happening in the country, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later as well. So much is happening that is not representative of that. So those are the messages we want to keep at the forefront.
As a fundraiser for the Drum Majors Fund, you have the Odyssey Jazz Collective that's going to be performing on Saturday, June 28th at St. Barnabas. This is one of the country's foremost jazz. Tell us a little bit about them.
Oh, they're phenomenal. Oh, my gosh. The Odyssey Jazz Collective, They have performed at Washington National Cathedral on a regular basis. They have performed at Canterbury Cathedral in England. They tour all over the country. It's an eight-piece group, an eight-piece ensemble. Their lead vocalist, Imani Grace Cooper, is one of the most beautiful voices your ears will ever hear. And so they're going to be with us in concert on the Great Lawn outside mm-hmm. under the tent on June 28th. And their music is sort of a cross between gospel and African style and Latino music and classical jazz. It's a really unique expression of music.
All right, we're going to post links with more information about it at our website, capeandislands.org. So let's bring in the other members of our Faith Roundtable. This morning we have with us Rabbi Karen Breitman from Martha's Vineyard Hebrew Center.
Good morning.
And Reverend Nell Fields from the Wacoit Congregational Church. Hi, Nell.
Hi, great to be here.
And Father John Sullivan, pastor of Holy Redeemer Parish in Chatham. Hi.
Good morning.
Welcome to the program. So as we said at the top of the show, immigration was a huge issue in the last presidential election for people of all political stripes. Yet 6 months into Trump's second term, polling shows a majority of Americans are not in support of the administration's rollout of immigration policies. In many ways, this is not surprising because what we're seeing is unprecedented. Masked, armed ICE agents sweeping up groups of people, most without criminal backgrounds, and deporting individuals without due process. We've also seen ICE agents showing up at places that in the past were considered safe havens, courthouses, churches, and schools. It's created a lot of fear, and not just for non-citizens. So I want to start with, how do you as faith leaders consider the treatment of immigrants, migrants, and non-citizens under the current ICE actions, and what faith teachings inform your perspective? Who wants to start?
I'll start, Mindy,
okay,
since
good. Sure.
Yeah. You know, the basic, you know, Christian mercy and love teachings come into play. Both Pope Francis and Pope Leo now have made very direct and very direct statements about how we need to treat immigrants. It goes back even further. Pentecost Sunday homily, Pope Leo quoted both Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II on the issue. And it goes even back further to that, to Pius XII in his seminal encyclical back in 1952 on the family and in the response to the conditions after World War II. So the church has a very firm and direct statement on that for now decades, if not generations. And so I'm happy to be part of that tradition.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say in the Torah, which is the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, starting with Genesis, of course, in those five books, the commandment that's repeated more than any other is not to oppress the immigrant. The Hebrew word ger is, sometimes it's translated stranger, sometimes sojourner. It's the person who lives among the group of people who was not originally from there, from a different ethnicity or background. The Talmud says that 36 times in the Torah it says not to oppress the stranger, some say 46. It also says to love the stranger. And these verses are combined with verses that say, you shall not mistreat the widow or the orphan, because there's a sense that the people who are most vulnerable in society, structurally, who don't have, for whatever reason, the economic or social protections that other people may have, to oppress those people who are most vulnerable is one of the worst things we can do. It's cruel. It's exploitation that really divides society. And so the Torah says over and over again, warns us not to do that. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in chapter 12 of Genesis, the father and mother of our religion, Abraham and Sarah, were sojourners themselves. They moved from their place to another place. They depended on the kindness of strangers, and they reciprocated with that. Abraham is described as opening his tent to whoever came who needed food and water, and Abraham and Sarah did that. And the opposite of what they did was Sodom and Gomorrah, who oppressed strangers and sojourners coming through their town. So I would say this is a teaching that's not only a teaching, it's a central teaching of Judaism.
Yeah. Anybody had anything? No?
Yeah, I love that. So thank you. So we follow that as well. And in the Christian tradition, we follow the Great Commandment, which is really a twofold: love God, love your neighbor. Love God, love your neighbor. It's not complicated, but we've made it so. But that is so central to who we are, and we act out of that commandment.
Yeah, Jesus doesn't make any exceptions. Jesus says, love your neighbor. He doesn't say, love your neighbor. Oh, except those who come
right
from these particular countries or this part of the world. And I just have to say, Mindy, what the administration is doing is despicable. It runs against every teaching and every Abrahamic faith and every faith I know of to love people, to welcome the stranger. You know, Jesus says in Matthew 25:35 and following, clothe the naked, give drink to the thirsty, care for the sick, visit those who are in prison, feed the hungry, and welcome the stranger. As Nell said, it's not complicated. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. What are you hearing from people in your community about their fears, concerns, or even support of these policies? And on the Vineyard, we recently had those ICE raids, and there was a lot of fear. We saw, you know, people staying home. And so what are you hearing from your community?
Well, my community is very, very clearly opposed to the way this is happening. And I would say that experiencing this happening on the island, it feels really, in an emotional level, like the point is cruelty and fear and dividing communities and creating a sense of mistrust. Because there are ways to rationally deal with immigration policy so that people are working together on the problems that we need to solve. But that's not what it felt like on the island. So my congregation are very upset at the lack of due process. Remember, many American Jews remember their immigration generations ago. Many of us grew up with relatives with accents, mm-hmm. with stories of what they were fleeing from. In my case, my family was fleeing from pogroms in Eastern Europe. We remember that. And the Torah says that we need to feel empathy for people who are refugees, because it says, remember, you were refugees in Egypt. You were strangers in Egypt. So I think it's very much a part of our culture. And whatever we think about immigration policy, those rational policy disagreements are not an issue. It's more the lack of due process and the way this is being carried out that is pretty much universally felt.
Yeah. It's also, you know, lack of transparency.
Right.
I mean, period. You don't need to wear masks. You really should have your name on your badge, and maybe the whole purpose to that is to frighten people,
right,
as part of their tactic.
Yeah. Fear. Yeah. Father John, you want to come in?
I would wish that, you know, my congregation was totally opposed to the president's policies. Of course, you got to be realistic and know that it's not the truth. And for Catholics, it's a hot button issue too, because so many of the immigrants are coming from predominantly Catholic countries, and we are stretching our resources to try to help them in any way we can. And we have, in the most recent history of the United States, Catholics have been a group that have been the targets of previous immigration spasms like we're experiencing now. And so it should be a very hot button issue. It should be something very close to the surface in each one of every Catholic's heart. I wish I could say it was, but so that's what I face.
Yeah. What about you, Will?
Well, if we believe the polls and all, I know that there are people within our congregation who are very happy with what's happening. And I've read polls from the Globe and the Times and what have you, the same folks who voted for the president say, yeah, he's doing exactly what we wanted him to do. which speaks to a deeper problem, a deeper issue in our country. And so until folks have a change of heart and decide that they want to elect leaders that are going to have compassion and civility and not be mean and evil, we're going to continue with this.
So how do you talk about these issues with your congregants, particularly those who have strong opinions?
Well, most folks won't approach me to talk to me about it because they know where I stand on it. But I've had a couple of people approach me, and as Rabbi Breitman was saying, I'm open to a civil, rational discussion about our failed immigration policies, which is a line we hear more and more now. Yeah, we need to change our immigration policies. But to support the draconian measures being taken now to intimidate folks is not the way to go about that. So I try to have with a few people that have approached me those conversations, but I know that, you know, at least probably half of the people in our congregation think it's okay what's happening.
How about you, Father John? How do you talk to your congregants about?
I don't often directly address the issue. But I feel it's no use beating people over the head. They know what the church teaches, or they should know what the church teaches and where we stand, and they should expect me to support that, and I do. I think that the most important thing to do is continuously preach, and I hope that every homily I give is justice and mercy. And if I preach that continuously, hopefully it'll sink in and they'll apply it to this issue. At times you do have to be a little bit more direct. And I've touched upon in homilies. I've never made a homily purely on the subject, but mercy and love as our basic faith principles needs to be taught, and I try to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. No,
we've been helping non-citizens. For the past 15 years, whether it's folks from Venezuela, the people that came from Haiti. So we've been feeding them. We do clothing drives. So our congregation is pretty much in line with sort of the Christian teaching. We do have a couple of people that don't necessarily buy into that, and that's okay, and they will certainly let me know when we cross that line. But for us, it's just a very simple thing. People are hungry, we're going to feed them. People need clothing, we're going to clothe them. When the folks came over from Martha's Vineyard, we were the first congregation on the ground at the Joint Base Cape Cod, helping with Spanish and giving barbecues, mm-hmm. Putting up basketball nets and things like that to help them out. So.
Well, we read from the Torah, from the first five books of the Bible. We chant from it every Sabbath. And as I said, this comes up a lot in our our reading. So we do talk about it when it's right in front of us. When I'm with people who I have a disagreement about this policy, I think I try to listen to what's at the core of their concerns, and I often find something at the core that is really important in the conversation, and we need to pay attention to. And there are things we can agree on. You know, we can certainly agree that we need safety, and everybody, whether you're an immigrant or not, needs to be held accountable if they commit violent crimes, for example. And we can work together to keep people safe, including keep all of us safe from a lack of due process, which also feels like a crime. So I think about talking to people so we can really hear what's at the core of our disagreements and work together toward a vision together.
Mindy, I think those of us who have the privilege of stepping onto the bima or into pulpits have been engaged in a form of malpractice for several decades now. we need to preach, those of us who are Christian, we need to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. As we said earlier, there is nothing confusing about it. It's clear. Welcome the stranger, period. So I think it's incumbent upon us to preach that, not to shy away from it, not to be afraid to preach it. And I think that we, those of us who are preachers, are in large part responsible for this movement that we've seen in this country for the past generation. Going all the way back to the Tea Party, we didn't stand up. We didn't say that was wrong because we didn't want to offend anybody in the congregation. You know, we need to offend some people in the congregation. You know, one of my preaching professors used to say the role of the preacher is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. We need to make people uncomfortable. And if people leave the church or the synagogue or the mosque because of that, let them go. Because it's been my experience that more people will come to your church, to your synagogue, if you are preaching what is taught.
Well, and I want to add to that, Will, proverb, West African proverb, when you pray, move your feet. So preaching is one hand. The other thing is going out and doing it.
866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to join our conversation, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We have our roundtable of faith leaders this morning talking about immigration and the treatment of non-citizens as the U.S. government takes unprecedented steps to enforce immigration policy. With us is Rabbi Karen Breitman, Martha's Vineyard Hebrew Center, Reverend Nell Fields, Wacoit Congregational Church, Father John Sullivan, pastor of the Holy Redeemer Parish in Chatham, and Reverend Will Mebben from the St. Barnabas Episcopal Church. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have an email from Sean who says, by weighing the current immigration policy against scripture passages, you run into a catch-22. Surely we can't literally follow biblical passages to a T in today's society. When you cherry-pick, you open yourself up to critique. And he lists a number of passages that he below. Thoughts on that?
Well, you know, even if you take that off the table, the bottom line is this: just be kind to one another, be nice, love one another. You know, this isn't, I'm not going to be here to defend or, you know, every single scriptural passage, but I think most people realize what is happening is not right, right. Period.
Yeah. Many people view migrants as others, right? Less deserving. In fact, some might point out that they're here illegally, so they're violating the laws and rules. I kind of go back to that's a whole due process, right? I mean, yes, you know, it was supposed to be they were rounding up the serious criminals, right? But that's not what we're seeing.
Yeah. Okay. Let's think for a moment, folks, about what would have happened when in 1492, Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue and invaded this country. What would have happened if those who were living in this country had rounded them up, put them back on ships, and made them go back to where they came from? If that had happened, none of us would be here. Okay? So just we need to keep a broader perspective on this. Nell's right. Karen's right. With all respect to the comment, it's, again, clear. Love your neighbor. Yeah. Welcome the stranger. I don't know how that can be in dispute.
There's another way to see this, and there's a way that what's happening for me is not primarily about immigration. And I think when you look at, for example, the opening of the book of Exodus, you have a Pharaoh who warned Egyptians that the Israelites are going to ally with invaders. They're going to have war against us. We need to focus on decreasing their numbers, which actually meant killing them or killing their babies. Do you think that Pharaoh was really interested in immigration? I mean, he was interested in his own power, his own wealth, in distracting his people. And this was a great way to do it because all of us are vulnerable to having fear stoked within us of the other. That is a human thing that all of us are vulnerable to. And Pharaoh was really good at it. And this is what I'm saying is happening here, because when you have a disappearing of people, even people who are documented, when you have arrest of opposition politicians and leaders, when you have a pardon of violent people who committed violence on January 6th and went through due process, and those people are pardoned at the same time that you're picking up a high school student who is on his way to volleyball practice, that doesn't feel like immigration. That feels like something else. And I think that is the thing that we really need to focus on. How do we counteract this stoking of fear and dividing of communities into coming together in a way that we bring communities together and through trust and caring for each other?
Hmm. Father John?
Yeah, I just want to concur with that. You know, the Sean there in his comments about the Bible, we got to remember the Bible is a library of books, and you know, different situations were faced and by the biblical authors. But the overall call to justice and mercy that comes from Scripture, no matter what the circumstances, and that's the focus that we need to remain our focus.
You know, one of the contributing factors to this that we haven't mentioned yet, so I will, is racism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you are, well, remember, folks, our current president of the United States made it possible for his current wife to become a citizen of this country, and her parents, and his previous wives were also non-citizens and came to this country. And that's okay. But if you're black and brown, that's not okay. If you are a white Afrikaner promoting apartheid and racism, yeah, you're welcome. Come on in. We'll roll out the red carpet for you. So, you know, all of this is it's wrapped in racism, which continues to be the greatest sin that this country has never addressed.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Often when immigrants were, when they came to this country, were, as I said, the other. In the early 20th century, so many Italians were considered not white. Mm-hmm. That was used against them. Obviously, were white, but they would try to use that racist argument against them too. In so many groups, it's yeah, unfortunately a long part of our history.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you. At the bottom line is it's definitely racism, and I think the administration is purposely using fear tactics and wanting to divide us. What I'm seeing in Falmouth in our community, yes, it's scary for everybody, but it's really bringing the community together, and there's a lot of work that is happening here to combat that.
Yeah. Faith leaders like Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. have died because of their message, and we're seeing political violence on the rise in this country. Do you have concerns that being outspoken about immigration or the actions of the government could put faith leaders at risk of harm?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I do the work that I'm doing so I can look my grandkids in the eyes. And they'll say, you know, what were you doing when? They know what I'm doing. And I think that this is part of the call. I don't want to purposely put myself in harm's way. I wouldn't wish that on any faith leader. But this is part of our call.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to add anything to that? Father John?
Certainly. That was the case with Jesus. I mean, he was a faith leader who put himself out there and you know, addressed the issues of his day. And any faith leader worth their salt is going to is called to do that, and has to expect, you know, backlash and unfortunate differences of opinion and violence even against us. So
it's a thought of mine. I won't say every day, but I do think about it. I've been dealing with threats from white supremacists, white nationalists all my life, you know, and going back to my youth in North Carolina and having to deal with the Ku Klux Klan and what have you. So it's always there. But as Father John was just saying, and Nell said as well, it's expected of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to die. I don't want to die early. But our Christian faith says we must be willing to die for another. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to keep doing, as I said to folks, as long as I have breath in this aging body, I will continue to say the things that I'm saying and to fight the fight in which I'm engaged.
Yeah. You know, I think, when we started, you know, after George Floyd, and there was all of this, you know, focus on no hate, and I was feeling very optimistic, and we had a conversation, and I think you said something like, yeah, we've been down this road before. I was asking if you were optimistic, and you were like very kind of, and now with all of this, you know, let's with the administration, no more diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff. I'm like, oh no, you saw this coming.
Well, it's just because I'm old, Mindy. I have seen this. I have seen this this movie before. And again, we have just not dealt with the core issue, which is racism. You know, this country has never apologized for its involvement in the transatlantic slave trade. You know, if we could just get the executive branch and the legislative branch and the judicial branch to say what happened during the period of slavery was wrong, just that might put us on the road to healing. Mm-hmm. But we can't even get on the road because we're not willing to say, oh, that was wrong. Instead, we hear, oh, my grandparents weren't involved in that, or my great-grandparents mm-hmm. weren't involved in that. Oh, I'm not having that. I don't, you know. So the issue remains and will continue.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Will, we got to keep fighting.
Have to stay in the struggle, Nell. I sign a
That's
lot of my
do.
Emails like that, in the struggle,
yeah.
because
yeah.
it is a struggle, and yeah. it's a daily struggle.
Yeah. And I would say about safety that the safety that we all seek and deserve, the path to that is to work together and be courageous together.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So I don't feel scared because I'm not alone out there. I'm led by colleagues, by members of my congregation, by so many people. And we're asking our political leaders, whatever party they're from, to have some courage. We need them to do that. Right. And we need to stand with them and together. And that's the only way to safety. And the truth is, this is a dangerous time, and yeah. it is for everyone, whether you speak up or not.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, everybody's feeling that fear and that uncertainty, right? And I think the No Kings protests over the weekend, what an amazing turnout mm-hmm. everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, and I've had friends who say, that gave me a little hope.
Yeah.
Right, that I'm
yeah.
not the only one, right, yeah. who's thinking this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as you said, we had the protests, the rallies
True.
Around the lynching of George Floyd. We had the women's march, you know, with the pussy caps or pussy hats or whatever they had. You know, we have been marching and around these issues for decades, if not, centuries. And yet we're still here. Yeah. Here we are.
I think my point of it is that's a lot of voters, right? And the politicians who are just kind of sitting back and, as you're saying, not being very courageous. I think this is a big message to them that there's a lot of voters out there who are not
yeah.
happy.
If those voters, when it comes time to elections, will vote their consciences and what they're protesting, maybe there's some hope.
Maybe some hope. All right, let's talk to Tom, who's giving us a call from East Ham. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for your four guests. I agree with everything in a general kind of way, but I see two approaches to the congregations. The rabbi carefully spoke about speaking with people who might disagree with the prudential judgments being made about how justice and mercy gets enfleshed. And then I hear Will from St. Barnabas saying, just put it out there, make them uncomfortable, some will leave, that's what happens. And I much prefer, and I know that neither one of you, the rabbi or Will, want to say 100% what you just said or how I'm summarizing it. But it seems to me that what we need to be working on is a change of heart amongst the 40%+ who voted for Trump. We need to be working for a change of heart with MAGA. In religious circles, that could be called moving from paranoia to metanoia, that word metanoia being conversion, that we really need, I think, to be working for a change of heart with MAGA. And that's not just going to happen by people turning out for the protests last Saturday. I was there in East Ham, and it was very important to be there. But that's not going to change the hearts or invite the people who disagree to examine what we're talking about, what you're all talking about this morning.
Yeah. Tom, thank you. Thanks for your thoughts. Appreciate the call. Anybody have any thoughts?
So metanoia certainly is what is called for. Mm-hmm. I would just say to Tom and others who may be feeling as he is, in the meantime, while we're trying to change people's hearts, 32 million women and children are being denied medicine and food around the world because of actions by the administration. 15 million children and women in this country are lacking food and medical care. And so wait until people change their hearts while we look at people dying? No, I'm not subscribing to that.
Anybody else have thoughts?
I think it's a both and. Mm-hmm. You know, it we continue to do the work. We speak out against policies that are just cruel. We've got to reach out to people who didn't vote perhaps the same way we did. We need to continue to write letters to people in government. We have to do everything. And I want to address what you said something earlier, Mindy, about the No Kings. This felt different. This really felt different. And I think it's because people are realizing this isn't just a feel-good thing. We are doing this to save democracy. We're doing this to save the lives of our neighbors. And I'm starting to see people in our community do the hard work. You know, there's a lot of people that are meeting about immigration and what to do and know your rights. I didn't see that before, and I'm seeing it now. So it feels different, yes. Okay.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about immigration policy this morning with our roundtable of faith leaders. With us is Rabbi Karen Breitman from Martha's Vineyard Hebrew Center, Reverend Nell Fields from the McCoy Congregational Church, Father John Sullivan, pastor of the Holy Redeemer Parish in Chatham, and Will Mebben from St. Barnabas Church in Falmouth. You know, we mentioned earlier these ICE raids and the deportations and creating this culture of fear, not just for immigrants, but for many other Americans as well. I'm wondering how you know, in your congregations, how you are trying to help people with this fear, because the fear is a big emotion a lot of people are feeling right now. So how are we helping people deal with that?
Well, one thing that we do in our congregation, we have Know Your Rights posters, cards. We have those everywhere. And I say to our folks, you know, even if you are a citizen, you really need to know your rights on behalf of other people. And you need to practice sort of in your mind or even in bystander training, what would you do? When you see people with masks on and guns drawn, it is frightening. Mm-hmm. And it's either fight or flight. So we're doing sort of active bystander training. See something, say something. Or in this case, don't say something, just film people instead. I talked to the I talked to the woman who had a tenant who was kidnapped by ICE, and it is very traumatizing. Yeah. To see that.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the one in New Bedford where they're smashing the car window.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who sees
that,
it's terrifying.
Yeah.
But I was, when you were saying that, you know, see something, say something, filming, but don't do something because you'll be arrested.
That's
too.
Right.
We've seen that, right? Where
That's
we've
right.
seen people try to, you know, interfere, saying, you know, what are you doing? And they end up in handcuffs as well.
Well, and that's why I think it's very important that people read the documents that, let's say, the Mass Attorney General has come out with. There's a lot of really great information. Read it so you know exactly what to say, what not to say, when to ask for identification, when do they have to produce a warrant, creating that private space even within your faith community. This isn't, all of this information is available, and it is crucial that we all read it.
Yeah, I want to second that. And I also want to say that because I think some of this point is cruelty and fear, and I think part of the way they do that is to split communities, I think being in caring community is itself a very powerful antidote to do acts of kindness, to be together with people. In our case, it's praying together, connecting with people. I think all of that, because that's what's being destroyed. That's what, it because Pharaoh gets power by destroying that, by creating distrust between the Egyptians and Hebrews and so forth. And when we create those connections, I think it's an act of resistance and it's good for our souls.
Father John?
Yeah, I think preaching always about community. I mean, that's what church is all about. And, you know, as I've just reflected here a moment, you know, oftentimes, especially in the summer, you know, more than half of the people that come to my church are not my parishioners, and they're from all over the country. And making a community that's welcoming to everyone, welcoming to wherever you come from, is, you know, the basis for helping to fight the fear, to help, you know, people see. I mean, that people come from all backgrounds and all walks of life and come together as a community to worship God.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I echo what Rabbi Breitman was saying. There is strength in the community, and so people are fearful. I want to encourage them to have a faith community, first of all, engage that faith community, be engaged in a faith community where you know you are not going to stand alone, that people are going to stand with you. And so that's the message that I try to deliver.
I think it's also, it's so disturbing when you see things like, you know, Nell, as you're saying, film it, and we have people doing that, but we had one guy who was filming and ended up being knocked down by ICE, you know, it's like, and then we had the, like, his name has escaped me, the running for mayor who was like, wait, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then they're putting him in cuffs and he's yelling, saying to them, you don't have any authority to be arresting citizens, but it seems like anything goes, right?
There's no respect for law and order. There's no respect for rule of law in this country. And we've seen that with this current administration, and we saw it in the previous administration that was elected in 2016. And so when you have a director of the FBI, as we have in this country right now, who has made it clear that it's the Wild Wild West for him, as far as he's concerned, there's no respect for law and order, and those, as was said earlier, who violated, desecrated the Capitol on January 6th and ended up causing the deaths of police officers, men in blue, and they get an excuse. The message that's communicated is violence is okay. Violence is okay. Go ahead. We'll protect you.
Yeah. But I think the more people see that and witness it, it's a tipping point. There's going to be a tipping point. I think we're getting there. Despite everything's going on, I have a tremendous amount of hope.
Mm-hmm. I would say, too, your point of speaking out is good. We look at, like, some of the individuals, like the 18-year-old who was taken on his way to volleyball practice, mm-hmm. and the guy that was sent to El Salvador. People were speaking out about those particular cases, and we did. Mm-hmm. And for a while, they were saying, nope, it's up to El Salvador. We're not going to get this guy back, and they get him back. And then, you know, the 18-year-old who was returned. But we don't have the details of every single case. We don't even know who some of the people who've disappeared. We don't even know who they are.
And the scary thing is, because there is that healthy dose of fear. Sometimes I'm motivated by the fact, who's next? Mm-hmm. Am I next?
Right.
And I'm like, nope, not on my watch. Yeah. So I think that people are looking at this. It's outrageous, and people are starting to speak up. And that's why you had that No Kings protest.
Right.
A lot of people there.
What are your thoughts on faith leaders advocating for policy changes to immigration? Is that something you all are preaching? Yeah, you're going, yep, no.
You have to. Yeah. You have to. It's one thing to speak up. But long term, we have to have those policy changes. And it's not easy. You know, this whole immigration thing, it is not easy. It's been, but we have to advocate for that. And we're here in Massachusetts for the most part. People are on the same page as I am. But now I'm reaching out to my relatives that live in different areas, writing postcards, you know, doing everything we can to get those policies changed.
Religion and politics cannot be separated. And I've preached several sermons on that. If you examine, go back to the story of Exodus, that was a political and a religious story, and you fast forward to the crucifixion of Jesus, that was a political and a religious story. So don't tell me religion and politics don't mix. And I'm grateful for the work of the Episcopal Church and its presiding bishop to stand up and to say to the administration, you know what, we're not going to play anymore. We're not going to play with you. We're not going to be in a codependent relationship with you. And your meanness around this immigration policies and all. And we have in the Episcopal Church the Episcopal Public Policy Network that is engaged on Capitol Hill every day and lobbying and advocating for justice and mercy, to use Father John's words this morning. And so, we have to be, you know, advocating. And anyone who says religion and politics don't mix, just encourage you to just take a quick tour through the Bible, and you'll see a lot of interrelationship there.
I also want to say that the economic, the wealth gap that we have in this country is so large that it does leave people vulnerable to being divided by saying, well, immigrants are going to take your job, or they're going to use resources. And if you're already really strapped, if you already don't feel seen by society in terms of your needs, in terms of getting health care, people can be more vulnerable to that. So I think that we need a comprehensive vision of a society where people are cared for. And this wealth gap that we have is not true of all of American history. It wasn't true in the 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. 70s. And we need to go back to a society where all people are taken care of.
Yeah, less than a minute left. Father John, you get the final word.
Oh, my. Just to follow up that religious leaders have to be united to preach, you know, their faith, especially in the Judeo-Christian tradition, to know that, you know, we're united on this. Every church needs to speak for justice and peace. And I think that's obvious, and that, you know, you'll gauge your response by how your church is responding to this issue is a very important way of addressing the overall issue.
Yeah. Father John Sullivan, pastor of Holy Redeemer Parish in Chatham, Reverend Nell Fields, Wacoit Congregational Church, Rabbi Karen Breitman, Martha's Vineyard Hebrew Center, and Reverend Will Mebben from St. Barnabas. Thank you all for the conversation this morning. Really appreciate you being part of this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.